Good morning. It's the Wednesday, June 7th, 2006, and this is the KBOO Morning News. I'm Angela Hancock-Revis.
And I'm Brian Smith.
Coming up on this program, the federal government has declared that Washington timber industry will be shielded from Endangered Species Act prosecutions for harming salmon and four dozen other types of water creatures. The FBI has refused to turn over 89% of Dick Cheney's FBI records in response to a request for the records under the Freedom of Information Act. And a new Pentagon directive allows prisoners' medical records to be used for interrogation. Weather for today calls for mostly cloudy with highs in the mid-70s. The time is 7:01.
The city of Eugene has settled six lawsuits against two police officers, ending litigation that has cost the city nearly $5 million. Former police officers Roger Magana and Juan Lara are accused of using their position to sexually assault numerous women. The men were indicted and fired in 2003. Magana is serving a 94-year prison sentence for raping, sexually abusing, or harassing 13 women during his 8 years on the force. Lara was convicted of using his position to coerce women into having sex while he was on duty. He got out of prison on an early release program and remains on parole and under supervision. The city has already settled 14 lawsuits related to the police officers. The scandal led to major changes in the police department, in numerous reviews, and an election proposal for citizen oversight of complaints against officers. Reports found that the acts against the women were not detected because the former officers methodically chose victims who were less likely to report the crimes and because the department monitoring failed. The city says now that the cases are concluded, all the reports and related materials will be made public.
Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has proclaimed a state of emergency in 10 California counties affected by the federal government's decision to severely restrict West Coast salmon fishing. The proclamation orders the State Department of Finance to provide loan guarantees to fishermen impacted by restrictions on commercial salmon fishing on 700 miles of coastline from Oregon to Big Sur. Fishermen in affected counties will be allowed to apply for a total of $9.2 million in disaster assistance loans from three financial institutions. In April, the National Marine Fisheries Service adopted an emergency rule recommended by the Pacific Fisheries Management Council to curtail commercial salmon fishing in order to protect dwindling Chinook populations in the Klamath River.
When asked to estimate how much money the average Oregon school district spent on administrative costs, participants in a 2005 survey guessed about 34% on average, and that's among people who would even wager a guess. 71% of the survey's respondents said they hadn't the foggiest idea. In fact, the statewide average is about 3%, according to data crunched by the Oregon Department of Education. Now, the Chalkboard Project, a nonpartisan research group that spent several years researching how best to improve Oregon schools, is trying to help Oregonians better understand how schools, districts spend public money. The group has broken down how much money every school district in the state spends on five separate categories: teaching and student resources, buses, buildings and food, business services and technology, principal's office, and central administration. The data lets users compare their own district to similarly sized ones and to the statewide average. So, for example, users from the Medford area might be pleased to discover that their district spends a full 73% of its budget in the teaching and student resources category, above the statewide average of 69%.
In an about-face, a union representing school classified workers has endorsed Democratic Governor Ted Kulongoski over Republican Ron Saxton for the fall governor's race. The Oregon School Employees Association had backed Kulongoski's Democratic primary challenger, Jim Hill, only a few months ago, saying that Oregon schools are worse off now than they were when Kulongoski took office. With the primary season over, the school employees union has decided to back Kulongoski for the general election largely because of his advocacy for boosting state school funding to $6 billion in 2007-2009. Public employee unions were crucial in helping Kulongoski win his first governor race in 2002, with union volunteers going door-to-door and contributing money to his campaign. This year, the union snubbed Kulongoski in the primary election to show their displeasure with his reforms to the public employee retirement system that reduced worker benefits. However, it appears the unions now are getting ready to rally around Kulongoski in his race against Sexton. The Republican nominee who stirred up the unions will talk of downsizing government and further reducing retirement benefits.
The city of Eugene has asked a federal judge to dismiss a $1 million lawsuit that alleges city police policy allows traffic stops based on racial profiling. The suit stems from a September 2004 when a police officer stopped Cortez Jordan, a black man, walking away from a nightclub. The officers frisked Jordan's waistband for a weapon but didn't do the same to Jordan's four white companions. The incident outraged minority leaders and prompted several members to resign from the city's racial profiling task force. Jordan's lawyers quotes a 2002 study of Eugene traffic stops that showed that young men of color were significantly more likely to be stopped than white males. The city has denied there is any evidence of a police policy or custom that allows officers to make traffic stops based on race.
Three men were attacked Saturday in what police say is a possible hate crime. The assault occurred about 2 a.m. Saturday as the men left the Escape nightclub at Southwest Stark Street and 10th Avenue. The victim said several men began verbally harassing them about their sexual orientation and then started throwing punches. A second victim said he was repeatedly kicked all over his body. The case is being forwarded to a biased crime detective for further investigation.
The federal government has declared that for the next half century, Washington's timber industry will be shielded from Endangered Species Act prosecutions for harming salmon and four dozen other types of water creatures. In exchange, the industry pledged to take steps to help salmon, such as leaving forests alongside streams on 9.3 million acres. That's one-fifth of the state, making it the largest such deal in the West. But as speaker after speaker at a signing ceremony cited that figure, none bothered to bring up the asterisks. Officials don't really know yet how many of these acres actually will get promised preservation measures. The deal is allowed under provisions of the Endangered Species Act by Congress in 1982. The brainchild of a developer's lawyer, the provision allows the government to promise not to prosecute violations of the act to landowners who take steps to help them imperiled species. Environmentalists have criticized the 1999 pact known as the Forest and Fish Report. They sought unsuccessfully to block it in court before deciding to work through the so-called adaptive management process that is supposed to be able to fix anything judged too hard on salmon or on timberland owners. This from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
Unmanned aerial vehicles, commonly known as drone aircraft, are about to be launched for the first time by the police in Los Angeles. UAVs have long been used by the military in war zones such as Iraq or Afghanistan, but the technology has been adapted for domestic use and could revolutionize the way law enforcement agencies carry out surveillance and rescue operations. The Los Angeles Sheriff's Department has been experimenting with a drone called Skyseer, which it intends to put into service later this month. Skyseer looks like a remotely controlled model aircraft. It has a wingspan of 6.5 feet and weighs 4 pounds. A camera is attached to its belly and a small battery powers the drone. The Skyseer has been designed for quick and easy use by police officers on the street. It can be folded up and stored like a tent in a backpack. The UAV can fly at any height. At 250 feet above the ground, it can clear a 25-story building and is almost invisible. The Sheriff's Department is keen to start using the drone in the situations where conventional crime fighting is either impractical or too expensive. This from the BBC.
Democrats and representatives of voter registration groups are accusing Secretary of State Ken Blackwell of trying to rig this November's election by publishing draconian new rules governing the activities of people who register voters. Testifying at a hearing chaired by Judy Grady, Blackwell's director of elections, lawyers for Acorn, Common Cause, and the Ohio Democratic Party and other groups said training documents drafted by Blackwell's office are so vague that they subject registrars to felony penalties for even inadvertent violations. As a result, ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, has drastically cut back its voter registration efforts while its lawyers review the new rules. Katie Gall, Ohio ACORN's head organizer, said in an interview. Samuel Gresham, an attorney for Common Cause, charged that the rules are part of a consistent pattern intentionally so by Blackwell to disenfranchise black, low-income, and Democratic voters. Blackwell's actions, Gresham and others said, are intended to suppress Democratic voter turnout in what is shaping up as a closely contested governor's race between Blackwell, a Republican, and Democrat U.S. Representative Ted Strickland. This from the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
Representative Catherine Harris has finally made the front page of the New York Times. A raw story has learned, and it doesn't look good. The Times reports, undaunted by a run of horrific poll numbers, staff turmoil, and public doubts from leaders on her own own party about her ability to win election to the Senate, Catherine Harris is thinking confidently beyond November. The article continues, Harris is the former Florida Secretary of the State who is best or worst remembered for her role during the state's election recount of 2000. The incumbent Democrat, Bill Nelson, leads Harris by upwards of 30 points in recent polls. In her insistence of running anyway, Harris has become something of a pariah among many of the people whose power she indirectly helped ensure 6 years ago. This from Raw Story.
State auditors say the California National Guard misused federally funded troops and anti-drug money to create unauthorized programs. It also failed to get state approval for a controversial intelligence unit that monitored a Mother's Day peace rally last year. The audit paints a portrait of the Guard in disarray, with 95 of its 109 armories in need of repair that would cost $32 million. Neither the Air nor Army Guard met its recruiting goals in the last 2 years, so both are understaffed, just as guardmen are being ordered to help protect the nation's southern border as well as fight the war in Iraq.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation has refused to turn over 89% of Vice President Dick Cheney's FBI records in response to a request for the records under the Freedom of Information Act. In all, the Bureau has released 112 of 1,061 pages reviewed during a two-year investigation following a request by San Francisco blogger Michael Petrelis. Petrelis filed the request prior to the 2004 election. Portions of nearly all pages released have been redacted. The release does not foreclose the possibility that the FBI may turn over more files in the future, but it remains striking. An aide to the FBI Freedom of Information Act office told Raw Story in February that 783 pages had been approved for release. It appears now that many of the pages were blocked from release by the department's declassification office, which is required to review all of the pages before releasing them. As a whole, the documents released do not shed substantial light on the workings of government or of Cheney's dealings with security and the law.
The Pentagon unveiled its most comprehensive directive for medical professionals in dealing with detainees yesterday, and rights activists denounced it for allowing broad use of prisoners' health data to guide interrogations. This from Reuters. According to the new directive, a detainee's medical information is allowed to be disclosed for several reasons other than medical treatment, including lawful law enforcement, intelligence, or national security-related activity, which includes interrogations. It also reaffirmed the military's policy of force-feeding detainees who engage in hunger strikes. Leonard Rubinstein, executive director of Physicians for Human Rights, said the directive puts doctors and other health professionals in the untenable position of assisting in the infliction of harm and pushes the United States further away from basic medical, ethical, and legal standards. He added, with access to such information, interrogators could exploit a detainee's anxieties, phobias, or depression, or take advantage of physical problems like back pain by using stress positions in an interrogation. The group called the directive an assault on medical ethics, the professional integrity of military medical personnel, and the Geneva Conventions governing treatment of wartime prisoners. But William Wickenwerdener, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, said the directive pulled together and added great detail to various existing policies.
The CIA is refusing to provide hundreds of thousands of pages of documents sought by a group under a 1998 law that requires full disclosure of classified records related to Nazi war criminals. This from the New York Times. Under the law, the CIA has already provided more than 1.2 million pages of documents. Many documents have been declassified, and some made public last year showed a closer relationship between the United States government and the Nazi war criminals that had previously been understood, including the CIA recruitment of war criminals, war criminal suspects, or Nazi collaborators. The CIA has interpreted the 1998 law narrowly and rebuffed requests for additional records for 3 years. The agency's stance poses a sharp test between the CIA's deep institutional reluctance to make public details about any intelligence operations and the broad mandate set forth in the law to lift the veil about relationships between the United States government and Nazi war criminals. Senator Mike DeWine, Republican of Ohio, the Senate Judiciary Committee plans to hold a public hearing on the issue next month and is planning to call CIA officials and members of the working group as witnesses. Under the law, the heads of the government agencies have the power to exempt from release 9 categories of national security information. But to assert such exemptions, agency heads are required to submit a report to congressional committees, a step the CIA has not yet taken.
The head of an investigation into alleged CIA secret prisons in Europe said that evidence suggests planes carrying terror suspects stopped in Romania and Poland and likely dropped off detainees there. Swiss Senator Dick Marty's final report, however, offered no clear direct proof that CIA detention centers were set up in Europe, an allegation made by Human Rights Group last year. Marty said Romania was part of what he called a rendition circuit and was used as a stopover by CIA-linked planes carrying suspects. He also said an airport in Poland was likely used as a detainee drop-off point and accused a total of 14 European countries, including Britain, Italy, and Germany, of violating human rights in connection with CIA activities. The report is addressed to the 46 Council of Europe member states, and it relied mostly on flight logs provided by the European Union's air traffic agency, Eurocontrol. Witness statements gathered from people who said they had been abducted by U.S. intelligence agents and judicial and parliamentary inquiries into various countries. Marty's investigation runs parallel to one by the European Parliament, which has said that the data from the Eurocontrol since September 11, 2001.
The full extent of European collusion with the CIA during operations to abduct terrorism suspects and fly them to countries where they may be tortured is laid bare today by the continent's most authoritative human rights body. Several states have allowed the agency to snatch their own residents. Others have offered extensive logistical support, while many have turned a blind eye, according to the Council of Europe. The UK stands accused of not only allowing the use of British airspace in airports, but of providing information that was used during the torture of one suspect. The report adds that there is strong evidence to suspect 2 European states, Poland and Romania, of permitting the CIA to operate secret prisons on their soil, despite official denial. The inquiry was launched in November amid political outrage over reports, first published in the Washington Post, of the existence of CIA detention centers in Eastern Europe. Other media investigations, including one by The Guardian, had uncovered evidence of the use of British and other European airports by aircraft that have been involved in renditions. This according to The Guardian.
According to the Agence France-Presse, U.S. troops face fresh accusations of more unlawful killings of civilians in Iraq as Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki ordered the release of 2,500 detainees in a gesture to promote national reconciliation. The Iraqi Islamic Party, the main Sunni Arab political party, accused American forces of murdering more than 24 Iraqis in a series of incidents across the country in May. In the latest of a string of allegations against U.S. forces, Jaburi said 29 Iraqis were killed in May in a separate incident in towns of Latifia and Yusufia, south of Baghdad, and in the capital itself. Jaburi said U.S. forces carried out another airstrike the next day on the house of Sheikh Yassin Saleh Shallah in Yusufia, killing 13 people, including women and children. The new accusations come after a string of charges of atrocities by American forces in Iraq, including the alleged killing of 24 civilians by Marines in Haditha in November and another 11 civilians by soldiers last March in Ishaqi. A U.S. military inquiry has exonerated the soldiers involved in the Ishaqi killing, while the investigation into Haditha is ongoing.
Three British soldiers were cleared yesterday of killing a 15-year-old Iraqi boy who drowned after allegedly being forced into a canal to teach him a lesson for suspected looting. This according to The Guardian. After a five-week trial, Color Sergeant Carl Selman, Guardsman Joseph McCleary, and Guardsman Martin McGing were found not guilty of manslaughter by a court-martial panel. The men were part of a crew of a warrior-armored vehicle and were on the last day of a tour of duty in Iraq when the alleged incident took place. The prosecution had alleged that Ahmed Jabbar Karim, who could not swim, was ordered into the Shat al-Basra Canal in May 2003 after being caught looting. There was only one eyewitness, Ayed Salim Hanan, who claimed to have been beaten by the soldiers and admitted that he had hoped for compensation from the British authorities for reporting the incident. After the verdicts, Phil Shiner, a human rights lawyer who represents the victim's father, said there are huge structural problems with the military system of investigating itself. He accused the Royal Military Police of a number of failings.
And nearly 1,400 Iraqi civilians were murdered in targeted killings last month in Baghdad alone, and many more died in indiscriminate bomb blasts, making May the bloodiest month in the capital since the war began, this according to The Guardian. The grim statistics came as Iraqi police found 9 severed heads in plastic bags stuffed into cardboard fruit boxes by the side of a road north of Baghdad. And a report said U.S. troops mistakenly killed as many as 7 Iraqi civilians a week at checkpoints last summer. This death rate has since been brought down to 1 a week after top officers ordered changes to how checkpoints were manned. The checkpoint casualty statistics reflect a heavy toll on civilians who fail to notice or understand orders to stop their cars and are shot by troops nervous about suicide bombers. The statistics do not include deliberate killings by U.S. troops, such as Haditha massacre last November, and they also exclude those killed by insurgents.
Indonesia has warned U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld that Washington risked triggering a backlash if it tried to force its approach to fighting terrorism on the rest of the world. Rumsfeld, wrapping up a 3-nation tour of the region, held talks with President Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono, Defense Minister Juwono Sudarsono, and other senior government officials. Topics discussed included improved ties between the two nations' militaries, security in the Malacca Strait, and ways to boost cooperation in the fight against terrorism. Juwono said he told Rumsfeld that at the largest as the largest Muslim country, we are very aware of the perception, and the United States is is overbearing, and advised against trying to force its tough anti-terror approach on other nations.
And the United States and South Korea kicked off talks this week on the biggest U.S. free trade agreement in more than 12 years, as South Korean farmers and labor activists vowed to do what they could do to stop it. Chief U.S. negotiator Wendy Cutler said the two sides would focus this week on relatively non-controversial issues, which she called low-hanging fruit, and save more difficult topics like rice, automobiles, and the treatment of products made in North Korea Industrial Park for later rounds. The core U.S. free trade agreement would be the biggest U.S. free trade deal since the North American Free Trade Agreement, which Congress approved in 1993. South Korea is the world's 10th largest economy and the United States' 7th largest trading partner, with two-way goods trade totaling about $72 billion last year. But South Korea has a much more protected market than the United States. About 45 South Korean farmers, union members, and other activists have traveled to Washington to protest the talks, but Cutler said she remained optimistic about our ability to conclude a high-quality, comprehensive agreement. As the protesters banged drums and chanted anti-FTA slogans outside the U.S. Trade Representative's office, this according to Reuters.
In Brazil, hundreds of landless farm workers stormed a congressional building in Brasilia, this from the BBC. Officials said about 500 people were arrested and more than 25 hurt, one seriously, when the protesters, carrying sticks and farm tools, smashed windows, tables, and doors, overturned a car, and clashed with police and security guards. They managed to force their way into an annex of the lower house of Brazil's Congress in Brasilia. They reached a room next to one of the two main debating chambers where a parliamentary session was taking place. Most of the protesters are thought to be members of militant offshoot of Brazil's main landless movement. The demonstrators said they had entered the building to demand an end to what they called slave labor and changes to Brazil's legislation to speed up land reform. They said they had planned a peaceful protest, but the police had attacked them. The farm workers have traditionally backed President Lula da Silva, whose party strongly supports land reform. But the government has come in for some criticism for doing too little to accelerate the process. When he was elected in 2003, the president promised to buy disused land and redistribute it to poor families with no home of their own. But the protesters said he has not followed through on his promise.
Spain's reservoirs are in a worse state than last year as the country heads for what some experts are predicting will be the worst drought for 60 years. This from The Guardian. Reservoir levels are at a 10-year low for June, and the country is entering a summer season in which little rainfall is expected, according to figures from the state news agency EFE. The drought is spread unevenly across the country, with the Atlantic facing north still well-watered, while areas in the southeast have extreme shortages. The worst hit areas are the basins of the Segura and the Jucara rivers in the southeast. Reservoir levels are down to 16% and 21% respectively, according to Spain's environmental ministry. That means that growth areas for tourism will be hit hardest. This is the second year of the drought in Spain, and experts have predicted it may last between 4 and 6 years. In April, the National Meteorological Institute warned that the country was heading for its worst drought since 1947. And that's the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, June 7, 2006. Weather today calls for mostly cloudy with highs in the mid-70s. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kboo.fm. Our producer for this morning's newscast is Brian Smith. Our assistant producer is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Boone Revis. And the KBOO Morning News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Angela Hancock Revis.
And stay tuned. Coming up later this morning on KBOO.